From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. For those of us who have pets, we know how strong separation anxiety can be, and that's for dogs and cats. Imagine the anxiety and sheer panic that can be created when siblings are separated due to the foster care system, and many times that separation can be permanent. Today on the show, you'll hear from a relatively new nonprofit in our state that works tirelessly to make sibling separation more tolerable. Through advocacy, support, and camps that bring siblings together, Kindred Matters creates a much more nurturing environment that helps erase the miles of distance. Then, in the second part of the show, you'll hear from two of our reporters about animal welfare, with one report on how humans can help animals impacted by wildfire, and another about updates to the beloved Cascades Raptor Center. That's next on Oregon on the Record. The foster care system is vital to housing kids with no other option. But it's not perfect, and one of the byproducts of the system is the fairly normal occurrence of separating siblings out of necessity. Today on the show, you'll meet a nonprofit that works to support these vulnerable kids who've been torn apart through no fault of their own. Tia Nordstrand, the executive director of Kindred Matters. Tia, thanks so much for coming in and talking to us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, well, let's just start with this. What is Kindred Matters? What do you do?
Yeah, so Kindred Matters is a nonprofit organization serving folks throughout Oregon. We serve siblings who happen to live separately, typically due to foster care, as well as what we love to call families of connection. So those are families who are doing foster care, resource care, kinship care, guardianship care, adoption, and really just any families who have been formed through connection rather than biological.
And you serve the entire state.
We do.
About how many families, kiddos, that sort of a thing? How many people do you serve?
So this year through our family camp programs, we actually served 162 folks.
Wow.
Those include providers as well as young people.
Okay.
And then for our sibling camp programs, we had 20 young people join us in June for camp. And we currently have around 40 scheduled to attend in August, but we do still have room.
Okay. Maybe for folks who don't know, talk about some of the obstacles and challenges of something like foster care, of which siblings can be separated.
Yes. So siblings are typically in foster care due to no fault of their own. Mm-hmm. They are incredible young people. So our Connect programs actually serve, we're in four different spots throughout the state.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, we have those programs located in the Eugene area, the Salem area, the Portland area, as well as the Central Oregon area.
Okay.
And those are open to any siblings who are living separately. They do not have to be one of our campers who attend one of our camp programs. We have wonderful contracted folks who provide those opportunities. Folks will go swimming. They might go to, we've gone to Wonderland. We've done bowling. We've gone to Oaks Park in Portland. They've gone to the zoo. Lots of different fun activities for siblings to get together. And the siblings who live separately, as well as their providers and any other young people in their home. So that could look like their foster siblings, that could look like siblings of the biological family that they're living with.
Okay.
And they all get to attend, and those events are free of cost. And we serve around 200 folks through those programs each year.
Why are siblings separated? What's the main reason why in foster care they get separated?
I think a lot of the reason for that is due to the amount of foster homes available and the space that folks have to care for young people. There are a lot of different rules and regulations regarding how large a home is, how many bedrooms they have, the amount of space that they have, and different things like that that allow for siblings to stay together. So sometimes if siblings are separated, maybe there's a sibling group of five who are all removed at the same time and they can only find placement for folks with two in one and three in another. So separation can occur that way. Sometimes folks are separated because perhaps one of them has a different biological parent than the other.
Oh.
And maybe they can go live with their biological father, but that is not the bio family of their sibling.
Hmm.
So then their sibling is in care in a separate placement. And sometimes it's the timing that they come into care. So some young people come into care prior to or after another sibling, and maybe the placement of their sibling isn't available for them.
Okay. How do these siblings find out about your organization? How do they contact you?
Yeah, so we have a wonderful relationship with the Oregon Department of Human Services and Child Welfare. We have a lot of fabulous caseworkers who put in the extra time and the extra care to apply to camp for their young people. We also have folks who have found us through social media. We have folks who have found us through a variety of different wonderful community partners. Project Lemonade is a wonderful partner of ours who really supports our young people. Angels in the Outfield, CASA is another wonderful avenue that folks find us, and a wonderful avenue for support.
The court-appointed special advocates.
Yes, yeah. Court-appointed special advocates. They're wonderful, and their folks in different locations are really supportive, and their volunteers are incredible. And the way some of those CASAs who who are volunteers will apply for campers to attend is also phenomenal.
Okay. You've mentioned it several times. Let's talk about it. Talk about the camps, what their purpose is and what you do at those camps.
Yeah. I think there's something magical about summer camp. I don't know if you ever happen to attend
sure.
summer camp as
sure.
a young person. But summer camp is one of the places where I really felt as a young person I could really be my full, authentic self. And that is our hope for our summer camp programs. We really want them to be designed for the folks we serve, by the folks we serve. We want them to be exactly what they need. So our family camp programs, while they aren't technically in the summer, we have one over spring break and one during Memorial Day weekend.
Okay.
Those camp programs are for those families of connection. So the adults get to come. We have a community education events for them. So in order to keep their foster care license, folks have to have so many continuing education units per household. And so we offer opportunities for them to do some continuing education, whether it's bringing in trainers or opportunities to learn from themselves as a community, or some opportunities for a little bit of respite and downtime.
Hmm.
And then our volunteers all come in and they get to hang out with the young people who are there while the adults have some time to learn and grow as a community. And those are typically long weekend events, so they arrive on a Friday or a Thursday, and they stay through Sunday or Monday. And they just get to do the quintessential summer camp fun,
okay.
Along with folks with similar lived experience as them.
So you might have a sibling in Cottage Grove and another sibling that's up in Portland. They can come together and meet at these camps.
Yes, so that family camp is an opportunity for that, and there is not necessarily a sibling component for all of our families
okay.
who attend family camp. They're just folks within the foster resource, adoptive, kinship, guardianship community that get to come and attend those camp programs. I think it's been really special. I've been volunteering for the org since 2012
mm-hmm.
before I started working in different capacities, and it's been so special for me to see the community that's been formed. I think that community connection and belonging are some of the most important things that we can have as people. And to see the way that the folks support each other long after family camp has ended, the communities that have grown, the ways that they will watch each other's kiddos, because you have to have background checks for the folks who babysit your young people who are in care. There are a lot of different components that go into being a foster parent, and the way that they can really support each other through that. Maybe it's chatting about what an IEP looks like for their young person and how this has moved through the school district, or what supports they can have for different behaviors they're seeing in their home. Maybe it's talking about supporting sibling relationships, or maybe relationships with bio families, because those are important to keep as long as it's safe to do so. And so the way that that community has really come alongside one another has been really special to witness.
Obviously, the foster system is very necessary, but no system is perfect. And an organization like yours that kind of helps augment that, you know, talk about that need, because I imagine there are probably more kiddos out there than homes, right?
Correct. And I think there's been a lot of growth in that space and a lot of work to find affirming and wonderful foster families to serve our young people. And again, no system is perfect mm-hmm. and there is always room for improvement and room for folks to come alongside our young people and to help support them in a challenging time in their life. So obviously the more foster families, the better. But yes, the system is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's challenging for folks to walk through. I think some folks don't really have the full understanding of what foster care really is. There can be a lot of misconceptions about foster care. I think the thing that I hear a lot is that our young people have a lot of difficult behaviors. And what I like to say is that behavior is communication. Our young people are really telling us what they need. Their behaviors might have been something that kept them safe for a really long time. And those are something that they just need to know that they're in a safe place with someone who loves them for exactly who they are and will guide them through the next phase. Reunification is always the goal with foster care. And we always really want to make sure we're working towards supporting the families and the young people. And sometimes reunification is impossible.
Okay.
But I think, yeah, there aren't enough homes for all of our young people, and especially for keeping siblings together. The more we can keep siblings together, the better. My brother will be the longest relationship I will ever have in my life.
Hmm.
He will most likely outlive my parents. I will know him far longer than I have known my partner.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that having that tie to your family of origin, your culture, the folks that like know a similar lived experience to you. Again, all of our experiences are our own realities. And while my brother and I had the privilege to grow up in the same home, we still experience that very differently. Mm. But being able to share those same stories and memories with someone throughout your life is incredibly important. So our sibling camps really strive to give those opportunities to our young people and allow them to come together and really just be kids. Because our kids are wonderful. And again, while yes, some behaviors exist,
sure.
They are kids experiencing difficult moments, and the absence of their siblings can make that even more difficult.
Imagine so. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Tia Nordstrand. She is the executive director of Kindred Matters. Without naming names, but just if you could maybe reflect on some of the comments that some of the kids say about the camps and what they've expressed to you about the necessity and the fun and the joy of it all.
Yeah, I think our campers are, again, the reason why we do this, and we are always striving to make our camps for them, by them. And I think some of my fondest memories are like the silly jokes that campers will make, or when you ask them like, how can camp be better? And one of them told me, get camp out of the woods. I want it in a glass castle. Obviously we can't quite make that happen. But we have two wonderful volunteers who come to mind instantly when you ask me that question. They were former campers who lived separately from one another. One lived in Washington and one lived in Oregon. And they started coming to our camp programs many, many, many years ago. And they went through camp every year. They came back year after year. And now they both have come back to serve as volunteers alongside each other. And one is actually one of our board members now and really gets to be the voice for our young people on our board. And just the way that they speak about how camp really connected them as siblings. While we do not want to be the heroes in their story, they are the heroes of their own story and the authors of their own story. We really appreciate how they shared that camp was a really important part of that connection and really allowed for them to kind of get away from all of the outside voices in their life and really just spend time being together. You don't have kind of the outside influence of maybe a parent or a caseworker or your teacher or a therapist or all of these. There's a lot of paid adults in our young people's lives.
Sure.
And I think being able to kind of remove that and just really be in a space where they can be themselves and share lived experience and go horseback riding or hang out at the beach, go swimming, different things like that. They have those memories to hold on to. We also do some really cool sibling connecting events and activities at our camp programs. We do something called Sibling Pillows and Quilts. There's a wonderful organization called the Quilting Sisters, and they provide us with so many pre-made lovely pillows and quilts that our siblings get to take home with them. So their first time coming to camp, they'll get to write a message or draw a picture or do something on a pillow, and then they stuff that and sew it, and they get to take it home as something to hold on to from their camp experience. And then as they keep coming back, we move them to a quilt, and that's something they get to take home. We've done scrapbooking in the past, and so those former campers have brought those things back and they keep them with them, and it's something that they get to have from their sibling to them. We also do birthday parties at our camp programs where they get to celebrate their birthday together and pick out a gift to give one another, because oftentimes they might not get to celebrate those together. And I think some of those moments are just really special and are something that our campers really speak to.
Yeah, yeah. You talked about being a volunteer before you became a part of staff. Talk about the volunteer opportunities that are available at Kindred Matters.
Our volunteers are some of the most incredible humans that I have ever met. I think it takes all kinds of kinds to do the work in nonprofit. And I think inclusion and equity and diversity are some of the most important things to us. And the way that our volunteers can kind of fill those roles and that our young people can see people that look like them, that have experiences like them, is so powerful for our young people. And so we really strive to have folks of all backgrounds join us to volunteer. So we have folks who come for the day for our family camp programs and volunteer during childcare. We have folks who attend our full weeks of sibling camp or our weekend sibling camps, and they attend in kind of a camp counselor role. You get to go back to camp as an adult, which is so fun.
She is Tia Nordstrand, the executive director of Kindred Matters. Tia, thank you so much for coming in and talking to us.
Thank you again. Appreciate you having me.
Let's check in with our own Julia Bobach about her story on how humans can help animals during wildfire season. Julia Bobach, reporter for us here at KLCC. Julia, great to see you. Thanks so much for coming in and talking with us.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Yeah, we're obviously immersed in fire season, and we all think about the human toll that it causes, but It creates a lot of havoc for wildlife. Talk about, you recently talked to a wildlife hospital called Think Wild in Bend. Talk about some of the things they talked about with regard to the impact on wildlife.
Yes. So the big thing that I got from my interview with a spokesperson at Think Wild was that wildlife are, like you said, also at risk for many different reasons during wildfire season. And also the fact that summer is baby season mm-hmm. for a lot of animals that are native to Central Oregon. And that means that it's a lot harder for them to flee wildfires and that they're affected more deeply. So there are a lot of things to consider with this timing and with wild animals.
Yeah, and I would imagine, like your story pointed out, a lot of us humans are going to be coming more in contact with wildlife because they're fleeing fires mm-hmm. and it might create more of a situation where we're coming into contact in more urban areas, right?
Exactly. So yeah, as animals are fleeing, they're going to areas where that are protected, which tend to be more urban areas, as we know.
Yeah. And I liked about your story is you got from this organization, Think Wild, about some tips that people can think about and do when they come into contact with wildlife. Why don't you talk about some of those tips?
Yes, exactly. So if you do want to help, which we all want to help wildlife, mm-hmm. right? The biggest recommendation was to leave out fresh and clean water for animals who may be suffering from smoke inhalation and dehydration and things like that. So what does that look like? Well, that can look like a dish of water, similar to what you might give your pets, mm-hmm. And leaving that out, making sure that that's clean and refreshing it daily. But also if you have water features on your property, like bird baths or like ponds and things like that, making sure that water is clean, that it's accessible for animals, and also making sure that animals are able to escape. Mm. So something that apparently happens as animals are trying to drink water on people's property is they might get stuck in ponds and water features, and they need to be able to get out. So rocks and ropes and like wood planks or things like that for like a young deer, for example, to be able to exit after drinking water. So that was a big thing. Another mm-hmm. thing, speaking of pets, is to keep your pets really close to avoid a sort of subsequent danger for wildlife being in urban areas, which is that they could be attacked by your pets.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially young, again, babies. Mm-hmm. And yeah, a few other things, just giving space and not feeding again. And if you do see an animal that's burnt or is behaving strangely due to dehydration or anything like that, once again, you know, trying not to engage, calling, there are tons of wildlife hotlines mm-hmm. that are available, including Think Wilds for mm-hmm. Central Oregon. So calling that. And if there's an animal that's burnt specifically that like kind of needs to be taken care of while you wait for professionals to get there. Mm-hmm. The recommendation is that you, when safe, you wrap the animal in 100% cotton cloth and put it in a ventilated box in a dark and quiet space while you wait for some rescuers to come.
Yeah. And I think your last tip, which maybe is the most important, be part of the solution. Help prevent wildfires.
Yes, exactly. That was, of course, you know, more than trying to attack the surface level, but just trying to be really careful about the ways that we're engaging with the space. Obviously 4th of July passed and fireworks mm-hmm. are sort of less of a danger, but things like that, shooting explosive targets and leaving cigarettes and things like that, just being really careful to prevent wildfires and keep your home safe from wildfires with defensible space and things like that, because that could also mean the difference between life and death for a wild animal.
Yeah, and that's good enough incentive. If we needed any more incentive about trying to prevent wildfires, think of all the critters out there that need our help. Julia Bobach, really appreciate your reporting. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks, Michael.
Now let's finish out the show talking to our reporter about upgrades coming to the Cascades Raptor Center. Hannah Bush, reporter for us here at KLCC. Hannah, great to see you. Thanks so much for coming into the studio.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you made a trip recently up to a well-known facility here in our community, the Cascade Raptor Center. They've been doing some upgrades. Talk about it.
They haven't started the upgrades yet.
Okay.
They are preparing to start the upgrades after Labor Day as a part of their accessibility initiative. They will be completely closed down for 8 weeks in order to completely redo their pathways and make the center more accessible.
Okay. And for many people who've been there, it's built on a hill. Even for people with no mobility challenges, it can be kind of difficult to see all the exhibits. So this will be, I imagine, a really great thing, especially for people who hate that walk.
Yeah, it's the Cascade Raptor Center is right in the woods on Spencer Butte. So it is steep and hilly, and it's all gravel roads, which are kind of hard to walk up, like you said, if you have remotely any mobility issue whatsoever. So the new initiative will have the grades will be decreased. They'll pack new gravel that will hopefully be less slippery. They're also doing things that aren't just about the steepness of the center. They are also including new educational signs that will be bilingual.
Oh yeah, that'll be really nice. And I know you spoke with the executive director, Julie Collins, up there, and she talked about the fact that she wants to be even more inclusive, right?
Yeah. They really believe that the more people are able to connect with nature and be out there, the more people will be able to do good for nature in the future. They want people to connect, but people can't connect with their animals or the nature that's up there if they can't get up there. She talked about how people who have been there in the past might not be able to if they have been injured or if they're aging, or people talk all the time about, I wish I could bring my mom there, but she can't walk up those steep hills, or just anything. It's a barrier.
Mm-hmm.
It's a barrier to learn about the raptors. It's a barrier to learn about the nature that's around us in the Pacific Northwest, and they are fighting against that.
Well, I'm sure people are going to be very excited about that. She is Hannah Bush, a reporter for us here at KLCC. Hannah, thanks again for this story and coming in.
Thank you.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Tomorrow on the show, we talk to a Bend reporter for OPB about yet another controversy at the Deschutes County Sheriff's Office. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.